Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, Thursday morning. It's going to be Thursday night by the time this comes out, or maybe Friday, depending on where you are in the world. Welcome to another episode of the Believe You Me podcast. Big thanks to, who did we have on Monday? We had a great guest on Monday. Oh, my God. Oh, Anthony Smith. You beat me to it, Harrington. You beat me to it. But Anthony Smith, what a guy. Thank you for co-hosting. But today, we've got a great show planned. We've got fights to break down. We've got Giga Chikadze taking on Calvin Kattar. And of course, a huge undercard. We also have a bunch of silly MMA, non-MMA shows we're going to get to in a minute. And we've got none other than Big Paul Craig, light heavyweight contender from Scotland, joining us shortly. And Kevin Holland, who had a tremendous 2021, or was it 2020? One of those years he had like a million fights, but now he's dropped down to welterweight and he's joining us shortly as well. But before we get to all of that, we'll have a little bit of fun and we'll see what Harrington's come up with. Harrington, show yourself on the screen, my friend. How you doing?
Doing all right. How you doing, Mr. Bisbee?
Welcome to the show. What's going on, bud?
Not too much, man. Same-ish, different day. Just excited to be doing the show, and I'm super excited to have fights back this weekend.
Oh, tell me about it. I mean, I didn't realize how it's not dependent or addicted, but it's like it is my life. Like I just did. I shouldn't really say this. But I just did an interview with Manchester United, their magazine, the football team in England, soccer. But I don't watch soccer. Do you know what I mean? I'd like to, but I just don't. I've never watched team sports. I just don't. And I just bullshitted my way through it. And he was asking, what is your favorite goal? What was this? What was that? And I was like, oh God, I was trying to do my best, trying to play the game. But I thought, I watch fights. Okay, that's it. And there hasn't been any fights for quite some fucking time. So to your point, fucking hell, it does feel good. A, for me to be going back to work and earning some money, but B, to have something, B, to talk about, but C, as a fan, to watch.
Dude, that's like, yeah, my favorite goal. The one where the goalie knocked out the winger when he was coming in a little bit too close into the box.
They were like, who was your favorite player? What was the favorite memory? What was the best goal you ever experienced? And I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. I'm coming out with bullshit now, buddy.
That's wild. How did they even make that phone call? Did like Sports Illustrated interview you once and they're like, oh, you're English. What's your favorite soccer team? And they're like, you said Manchester United and now every year Manchester United hits you up for a quote.
Yeah. No, because when I won the belt, I was very lucky. When I won the belt, I went and did like a Champions Tour of England. And I guess I am a Man United fan and I do try and watch a game here and there, but I don't watch many team sports. When I do get round to watching it, I do enjoy it. But anyway, they took me to Old Trafford, that's the grounds, and they give me like a personal tour and took me on the pitch and in the locker rooms and all the rest of it. And again, my bullshit ability went through the roof. I'm like, oh God, because I'm a very casual fan. And when I say cash, I mean super cash when it comes to football. I do enjoy it. And if I'm there, I'll watch it and I appreciate it. And I could kick a ball pretty good. But knowledge? No. The reason being is because I got this documentary coming out in March. So now all the PR is starting to ramp up. You know what I mean? So I spoke to Manchester United. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Hope you don't see this interview.
Dude, that's pretty cool. Did you, so like in the United States for like sporting events like that, they'll have, people will go out and drop the first puck ceremoniously, or the big one is throwing out the first pitch, which we've seen, you know, a number of UFC fighters do both great and not
Conor
so great.
Conor McGregor didn't do very well.
Right. Is there anything like that for, you know, football or soccer, like any kind of like before the game ceremony that celebrities do?
I don't think there is. I know they flip a coin sometimes, don't they? Did they flip a coin? Yeah. I don't know. that's how bad I am. But no, I don't think there is. I don't think there is. Is there? No, there isn't. I remember my brother Conrad, before he had an accident in the army, well, pickaxe stuck in his head, accident, act of deadly assault is another way of putting it.
Accident?
He was on the, yeah, whatever. It's another podcast, Harrington. He was on the verge of turning pro as a rugby player. And this is like a few weeks before the accident happened. And St. Helens Rugby Club, which is kind of almost equivalent to Manchester United in terms of rugby. They're a big rugby league team. They called me up. They got the wrong number. They got hold of my house instead of my brother Comrade's. And they called up and they were asking for Comrade. I said, oh, no, you've got the wrong number. I'm his brother. And they said, oh, do you play rugby? I said, yeah, I do. I said, but nowhere near as good as Comrade. You know, and they said, well, do you want to come in and have a try? I said, trust me, mate. I'm not. Conrad's the guy that wants to play rugby. He says, do you want to be a ball boy? I said, a ball boy? I said, no, I'm fine, thanks. He said, hey, he says, don't knock it. We can give you £50 a game. And then you get to get in the bath with the lads afterwards, the big communal bathtub that the rugby players play in. I'm like, it's a lovely offer. Thank you very much. But I'm okay. If you want me to get into a bath full of men with shampoo and bubble bath and big sweaty people, you're going to have to pay me more than 50 quid.
Yeah, I mean, is that like they? It seemed like they were selling that to you as a perk.
No, that's what I mean.
That's part of the job.
Dress this up as an opportunity, okay? I'm avoiding baths with males, okay? And it's not me being homophobic because I'm not. God bless you. Do whatever you want to do. I just don't want to share a bath with a bunch of dirty, smelly players that have just ran around a pitch for an hour and a half. You know what I mean? Call me silly. Talking of silly, before we get into the MMA stuff, Harrington, you compiled a list of some non-MMA stories, and there's one here that I like. Here's what you've told me. I know nothing more, but you said in the notes here, a guy didn't tip a bartender. Well, you should tip your bartender, certainly in America. And it led to his arrest, and he got a fine for over $5,000. Now, before you give us the color or the facts of this matter, in the UK, which is where I'm from, tipping isn't part necessarily of the culture. I do tip, some people do tip, but it's not like a given. But and then, so like when I first moved here and everyone tips like crazy, of course you have to, you get good service. And by the way, it does, you can tell because you get used to the service in America. And I love England and the UK, but when you go back, I'm like, what the fuck is this service? This service is terrible because I've been spoiled by the American service. It's because tips aren't part of the culture. Anyway, tell me about this story, Harrington.
Okay, so there was a bartender, it was a New Year's Eve party, right? And this guy, he racked up like, you know, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 drinks, something like that, like a pretty large bill for this New Year's Eve. He completely stiffed the bartender, gave him no tip, and that made it burn into the bartender's mind like, oh, I remember this guy. So later that night, when the cops came around with CCTV footage of a man burning a Christmas tree down next to the bar, the bartender goes, oh, yeah, I remember that jerk off. He didn't tip me. And they ran his card, and that was that.
So massively misleading headline that you put in the notes there. It's got nothing to do with him not tipping why he got arrested. Basically, what we're talking here is karma, right?
Yes.
Treat people how you want to be treated. You be kind to fellow man, then they'll be kind to you. You do someone a solid, they'll do a solid by you. If you tip them, they won't be spiteful and rat you out to the police if you burn down a Christmas tree. To be honest, it sounds like this guy was a bit of a piece of shit. I'd He's not tipping people. Yeah. He's burning down fucking Christmas trees. I say we find him when we beat the fuck out of him.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was only New Year's Eve, so you still had like a couple of days more grace period to get rid of that Christmas tree. There's no reason to be lighting it on fire. But I do think there's something there where it's like, it's not like he would cover for the guy if he did give him like a little bit of a tip. I genuinely do think it's a thing where bartenders, you know, if you work in the service industry, because the reason for that tip disparity is that, you know, people make, you know, $2 an hour. It's well below like a living wage here. So
no, they don't make $2 an hour. No way.
It's very, very low. It's like insane. It's well below minimum wage because the tips are included like as like a, you know, if your tips go
below. No, for sure. It's kind of a proviso. Listen, you're going to have this small wage. The guaranteed wage is very small, but you're going to earn a lot of money in tips. It's kind of like when I did fucking door-to-door sales. They said, well, you're essentially getting paid fuck all, but you're going to get a bit of money when you get some sales. Problem is, you're not going to get any sales because you're a meathead. You're a skinhead. You don't know how to sell. You're not a salesman. You dress terribly. You look intimidating and people just want to close the door. Brian.
Well, when at the restaurant I was working at anyway, the restaurant is obliged to hit minimum for you to hit minimum wage on your like hourly rate. So if you don't make any tips, the restaurant has to pay you more.
So basically the minimum guarantee would be the minimum wage. And what is that in New York? I think in California, I think it's $15 an hour.
I think it's $15 in New York as well.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no legal requirement for tips, though, is there? It's not a legality thing. Although I have seen many waitresses challenge or waiters. I mean, I hate to assume genders like that.
Sure,
it's a joke, by the way. It's a joke. I'm being silly. I've seen them challenge many people and say, "Excuse me, was there a problem with the service?" Never me, of course. I tip very well. Minimum 20% always.
Of course. And here's the thing. I, as somebody who's been working in the service industry for like now a better part of a year, just being able to see that side of it, I do see just how much these, like, you know, people's livelihood does depend on it. You know what I mean? Like making that it's, you know, for you to be on the fence about that or to even just do the right thing just a little bit when you're getting a couple of drinks, it does go a long way. And for a bartender to get stiff, like, yeah, that does implant your memory. So it's like, I don't know, if you're going to be out doing reckless stuff, why would
tip you everybody? If you're going to be committing crimes in the premises, make sure you tip everyone is basically what you're saying.
Of course, grease some palms.
Well, grease the palms, of course, but how about just not committing crimes? How about not burning the place down first? That should be your first approach. But whenever I'm in like a busy bar and I know I'm going to be going up, and by the way, I don't drink these days, so those days are behind me. Hell, you yeah. know, but if I'm ever in a busy bar area, I always make a point of giving a really good first tip because it's like, hey, remember me? I give you that fat tip. So I don't want to be standing around like a knobhead waiting for 30 minutes to get served again because they're like, oh, there he is. Oh, Mickey Big Tip over there. Sounds weird. Mickey Big Tips. That's today's episode. Oh, my God. But you know what I mean? You'll chuck him an extra fancy one. You know what I mean? So like, oh, shit. So it stands out. So then next time you're just going to give him a wave. They're like, oh, this guy tips well. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, listen. You're not getting a fucking stupid tip every drink. There's going to be a lot of drinks. You got a fat tip at the start. Next time, it's going to be a regular tip. Come on.
You are 100% earning that first tip with the amount of work you're going to be doing bringing for me sure. drinks.
Exactly. Anyway, I believe also from what you tell me that cows are now going into the metaverse. And this metaverse thing, by the way, is I don't know if you know much about this, Harrington, but we were talking about the Matrix recently. And that is where the world is going with the metaverse and virtual reality. You know, people are buying real estate in the metaverse. For people that, can you explain the metaverse for the people and maybe me as well, please, Harrington?
So it's a digital space, right? So you're right now when you're, you know, I think doesn't Lucas have an Oculus? Like if you
plug- he does.
So if you plug into that, that's your metaverse, right? You can see things. They're tangible. They're touchable. You can move around them. What Facebook is trying to do is like integrate that into one platform where, you know, all your digital currency, right? Your crypto, your Bitcoin, your Lithium, like you're going to be able to see that, hold that, use that. Like that's going to be this new space. And everybody's going to be, you know, working towards a life in a digital world.
Yeah, and it's crazy because that is the way it's going. And it's hard to wrap your head around and really grasp the concept for a lot of people that maybe are of my generation or an older generation or whatever. But that is the way where it's at, pardon me. You know, I think I saw there was $350 million worth of real estate sold in the metaverse last month, or maybe it was the last 3 months. I forget the exact stat, but that's a lot of money. You got Snoop Dogg out there. You got Snoop's World, and he's bloody, what's it called? You know, he's developing his own like area of the metaverse and things like that. And in fact, Block Asset, who I work with, my partner with, I might be letting the cat out of the bag, but one of the stuff things that they're doing using the Oculus headsets, we're going to be doing stuff where you can, like me, I'll do content. We're going to film it on these 360 degree cameras, and you put on an Oculus headset, and then you're there, and we're all here together. And then business meetings around the world instead of Zooms, people are going to be sitting there all in the same fucking room via a headset, which is just like the way me and you are doing this podcast. I'd rather do it like this than have some weird animated skin bloody avatar version.
Okay, so let's picture this then. What is the Believe You Me metaverse podcast studio look like?
Well, we're not in your house. We're not in Gas Digital Studios.
I'm thinking it's got to be a castle. There's got to be a great hall.
Exactly. Yeah. We're in it's Clitheroe Castle, but it's got a roof. Clitheroe Castle has no roof and it's very cold. You know what I mean? It's Clitheroe Castle. But still, the reason for this story is that, and I did see this one on the news the other day, for cows that are being milked, they are harnessing the power of virtual reality to make these cows' lives happier.
Yeah, so basically they're getting like a 2-for-1 deal here, right? They're able to keep the cows penned up where they're not going to be overusing their muscles and moving around and doing too much. They're going to be fed, you know, the same food they're given, and they're going to have these VR headsets.
Look at that.
On. And they think they're in a meadow. For all intents and purposes, in this cow's mind, I mean, the milk that's being produced by these cows is better than the regular milk you're getting from
How is it better?
I don't know. I mean, they're testing it. They're doing all kind of different.
So you're telling me that if a cow is in a meadow and it's happy, happy cow, happy milk.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at, you know, Kobe
happy
beef,
wife,
right?
Happy life. Just stick a fucking Oculus headset. Rebecca, get the Oculus on. Leave me alone. Stop giving me a hard time.
No, dude, if you put a VR headset on Rebecca and she was just at an antique store browsing for the whole day and she got, you know, your metaverse credit card, she would be so happy.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd be happy if it was the metaverse credit card and not the real fucking credit card. That's for damn sure.
Everybody wins in this scenario.
Everybody wins. Everyone's a winner, baby. No, but these cows, come on. Come on. Do you think they really think? That I bet those cows are freaked out majorly because they can't take it off. They've got no hands. They've got legs. Do you know what I mean? And they're like, oh, God, he's doing it again. What's that? He's sticking the fucking headset on. So I've got no choice. I can't take it off. I'm starving. I know there's hay or grass there to eat, and I'm getting milked. I'm getting jerked off whilst in the metaverse. It's not too bad.
Or, I mean, the other side of that coin, though, is if you think about it, like this cow is sitting there in a barn, not having a good time, being in the dark, kind of stinks, right? Crack of dawn. Yep. You're still out there. The farmer comes out to get his milk, and instead of just sitting there in the dark, still bummed out, puts this little VR headset on you. You're in like a happy, you know, you're in a meadow. You're where you want to be, and you haven't had to move anywhere.
I mean, I'm all for it. I am, but I feel sorry for the cows. How about actually putting them in a meadow? Do you know what I mean? How about getting out there in the real life? And fuck the metaverse, okay? We're putting cows in the matrix, is what you're saying, to make their life better. That is precisely what you're talking about. You know, the next step, you will be in the matrix, Harrington. You will be in the metaverse. You will have your headsets on, and you'll probably still look quite the same. I mean, you are dressed today. You have a hat, a shirt on. There's, you know, it's good. It's good. I like it. But I feel sorry for this is animal abuse, Harrington.
Well, I mean, yes, it is. But it's, you know, we're abusing these animals, and this is for the it's for the good of mankind, though, right? Like, the farmers are coming out and saying that they're getting better results with their milking for this. There's less time that that has to be spent moving these cows from point A to point B. Less of them, like, grazing. Like, you need to take up less land for these cows now, right? Because you can keep them in a barn, right? You don't need that, like, big old pasture.
But they need the exercise. They need to be able to walk around. They need to experience fresh air. I mean, the metaverse, yes, you could hoodwink a cow into thinking that that's reality. But you know, it's a pretty sad existence. Here's what I want to know. Who was it? Was it Joaquin Phoenix when he was at the Oscars? Did you see that years ago? And he came up and he won. I think it was Joaquin Phoenix. See if you can find that. It was the most ridiculous speech, acceptance speech you've ever seen in your life, because he got, I think it was an Oscar or a Golden Globe or one of those stupid award shows. And he won, yes. And he went up and he was almost crying, talking about extracting the milk from cows. Listen, I'm an animal lover. I am. But I also like milk, and like there's bigger problems. And we talked about this at the time on the podcast, I believe. And I'm like, he's complaining about the cows having the milk taken away from them. We're the literally in Los Angeles on 6th Street and bloody Skid Row. There's thousands of human beings without a roof over their head, but he's choosing to take a stand about the cows having their milk taken away. I'd love it if we could play that video on here just to laugh and revisit that one more time, because it was ridiculous.
Well, I'm looking in a couple of different places. It seems the video has expired.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, they want to get this one.
People took it down. They're like, we need that down. He's a big movie star. Let me see. All right. And what else? What else have we got, Harrington? There's something about train robberies.
Yeah. So this I thought was kind of interesting. I kind of need the picture as an aid here. But there's essentially now like the train robbers back. Right. The remember the old West bandits would ride up on horses and jump on the stagecoaches and take over train cars.
Is it Dick Turpin?
I don't know.
Dick Turpin, hold on. Dick Turpin. Just Google Dick Turpin. He was the highway thief.
Okay.
No, he wasn't robbing trains. No, we're talking. You talked about stagecoaches and horse and carts way back in the day.
They would pull up to the train on those and then jump on.
Oh, you're talking
like
about
some
that
Fast and the Furious movie.
Okay, I'm way off the mark.
Dick
there.
Turpin, noted horse thief. Yeah,
there we go. Old nice. Dickaroonie. Old Dick Turpin. So go on, go back to your non-story.
Right. So there's these cargo trains that are heading all over the country now, and people, instead of, you know, going and being porch pirates and, you know, trying to knock off packages there, they're attacking the cargo trains while they're in transit. And you can see, like, in LA, that image right there, this is all boxes that are strewn about from people going into these cargo trains, opening stuff up and just grabbing and looting and leaving the refuse on the side of the road.
Hey, I tell you what, that's LA in general right now. I mean, every day I put the news on here and there's a lot of crime and there's a lot of murder. There's a lot of people getting followed home, a lot of people getting robbed, a lot of people getting murdered. It's fucking insane. I mean, the crime wave in LA, I don't know what it's like in New York, but I mean, number one, the littering of these people. Look at all those boxes everywhere. Mm-hmm. At least pick up after yourself. My God. But yeah, it's people getting murdered left, right, and center. And trains getting robbed of their Amazon packages. I mean, how are they going to get their at-home COVID test delivered?
Well, this all leads into, can I just do one more? Because I thought this is the funniest headline I've seen.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Go on.
Two LAPD officers have been fired because they failed to respond to a robbery because they were busy trying to catch Pokemon.
Pokemon Go! Right?
Yeah, they were trying to catch a Snorlax on Pokemon Go, and their commanding officer was telling them...
Harrington, stop. Listen, it wasn't a bad segue, but you just went full on into and exposed yourself that you even know. I've never heard the word Snorlax in my life, but you certainly have context for this. A Snorlax?
Please, tell the
real people that don't spend their lives on Pokemon Go what a Snorlax is.
Well, I'm a man of a certain age, so I remember using a Master Ball on Snorlax when I was 8 years old.
A Master Ball?
Yeah, well, it's the hardest one to get to in the game. So he's like a pretty hard Pokemon to get. So these guys were just, you know, attempting, throwing their little Pokeballs at it, playing in the augmented reality space. And like I said, their commanding officer was telling them to get over to the robbery. And they did not respond. When they checked their phones, they saw like, oh, you guys were playing, trying to catch this guy. Like, they looked at the logs on their phone.
That looks like Harrington in the metaverse, if I'm honest.
Dude. I'm not gonna lie, that'd be pretty sweet. That would be pretty sweet if I look like that in the metaverse. But I don't know. That's an indication exactly what you're talking about. This virtual reality is leading to the crime wave going through the roof.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, I think we're going to have Big Paul Krieg joining us in just a minute. As we know, he's a light heavyweight contender. Oh, no, you're right. Stay on the screen, Harrington. And he'll be joining us in just a second. But until then, we'll just keep chit-chatting away. All right, today's episode is brought to you by Sheath Underwear. Sheath Underwear, you know the one. The beautiful, stylish, comfortable, long-lasting underwear that provides you with a dual pouch so that you can keep everything comfortable, cool, and separated. Listen, you can wear your Sheath as normal briefs, or you can utilize the latest in men's brief technology, the dual pouch, as I just mentioned, which gives your wiener its very own place to call home. Harrington, you and your wiener have a place to call home. But long before you had that jazzy apartment, you had your Sheath underwear, which I guarantee you're still on the same pair that you got years ago, because these things last forever.
Yeah, well,
you cleaned them. I know you did. You cleaned them. They've been washed, but you've still got the same pair now.
Well, yeah, so I do have the pairs that they sent me the first time around, and certainly, you know, you can tell they've been worn, but they are still, you know, intact and usable and everything. But I love these new designs they sent me. I got the riffraff ones. I got the ones that look like they're straight out of the Matrix with a little code coming down them. And, you know, and I like, you know, it's fun just hanging out in my sheets, looking good around the apartment, feeling comfortable.
And make sure you keep that to the apartment, okay? You are not hanging around in just your sheaves on any episode of the Believe You Me. Anyway, listen, they do have new materials as well, like the mesh and the bamboo. So if you're training BJJ, they've even got a full base layer. So Sheath underwear, I say it all the time, they've supported this show for a long time. Listen, we are not Disney. We're not the UFC. We're just a little independent show. So please, they support us. So when you want to buy underwear, please support them. Go to sheathunderwear.com. Use the code BELIEVE20. You're going to get 20% off your order. One more time, sheathunderwear.com. Use the code BELIEVE20 for 20% off your order. Okay, where were we? As we said, it is great. And by the way, fantastic stories, Harrington. Very, very lighthearted. Giga Chikadze, Kelvin Kattar, it's back. We're at the Apex. We've got Francis Ngannou, Cyril Garn next week. The UFC is back on a roll. Giga Chikadze, Kelvin Kattar. I mean, that is a huge fight in the featherweight division. It's crazy because Kelvin Kattar, he was in the first fight card of 2021 against Max Holloway. Obviously, we saw Max Holloway and the best boxer in the UFC and all that. And now he's going to be facing Giga Chikadze. I mean, fucking that is two tough fights on the bounce. Giga Chikadze, I mean, this man, what he can do in the octagon, the kicking ability, the speed, and of course, he's a great grappler as well. I mean, he's got a very bright future. He's got a tough fight, but if he can get through Kelvin Kattar, which I don't know if he can, I don't know if he can do that. It's a very closely matched fight. But I think if he does, he could be one of the next guys to fight for the belt at 145.
Yeah, I mean, this fight is super weird given, like, just from a statistical standpoint, just how much Max Holloway kind of ruined Kelvin Kattar statistically in the UFC. You know what I mean? Like, at this point right now, as it stands, he eats more than 8 shots per minute over his UFC
career. Kelvin Kattar?
Yes.
So on the stat sheet, that's what it says.
So for every minute he's been in the UFC, right, he's absorbed 8 shots during that time. It's just mind-bending, the process, how much of a beating.
As you said, that's got to be because of that performance against Max Holloway. I don't know how many shots it was. Just look it up real quick. Max Holloway, Kelvin Kattar, I think he hit him like 500 times or something just ridiculous.
Absolutely astronomical, yeah.
It was insane because we were talking to both guys, Chikadze and Kelvin Kattar, yesterday. And Chikadze is like, I'm gonna take this guy out because he gets hit. Look, Max Holloway hit him fucking so many times and never took him out. If I can hit him half that amount of times, I'll do that. Brian?
So Holloway tried to hit him. He threw 746 strikes and he landed with 445 of them.
I mean, listen, you think you're having a bad night at the office? Do you go to work and get smacked in the face 445 times? 445 times. I mean, number one, fair play to both men, really, delivery and acceptance and taking that. But Kelvin Kattar, I think one thing's jumping off the page, he's a tough motherfucker.
Oh, he's as tough as they come. Absolutely. You know, I mean, with this guy, he's been, I think it's let me look up the exact stats, but I know he has never been knocked down in the UFC. Not knocked out. Never been taken off of his feet over the course of his UFC career before. And we're talking eating over 400 shots from Max Holloway. Didn't touch the ground once.
Max Holloway isn't the biggest one-punch knockout power guy, but what he does do, he has tremendous volume, as we can clearly see, and he wears people down. And he does get a lot of finishes, you know what I mean? But that's because eventually you hit someone enough times, you know what I mean? Maybe you haven't got the one punch, the two punch, the three. But by the time you're on 100 and something, the guy's generally falling. And when you get to 445, one would assume that you just even if you could take it, you just will to God, you know what? I'm just going to fucking go down to one knee because this is a very difficult day for me.
So, I mean, like, just the mental fortitude there, because I don't know. I all the respect in the world for Calvin Kattar to be still fighting in that fifth round as Max Holloway is talking to the commentary team to not fold, like you're saying, right? Like, at a certain point, it's like, you know, the Rory McDonald fight is one that, like, always jumps to mind, where it's like a beatdown can get so bad you just kind of crumble underneath the weight of it. And for Calvin Kattar to still be standing there to get his hand raised at the end with Max Holloway is certainly a moral victory.
Well, no, it is. And you know what it all boils down to is mental toughness. Do you know what I mean? To endure, and I'll be respectful because I'm a big fan of Calvin Kattar. And by the way, he's coming into this super confident. I was talking to him yesterday and he's like, yeah, so what? Shit happens. You know what I mean? That was a good night for Max. It was a bad night for me. But again, it just shows the mental toughness and to endure that kind of, for want of a better word, a beatdown over five rounds to take on 445 shots, but to still be there and still believe in yourself and still be pushing forward and still trying to get the win and
you're trying to finish
fight is fucking sensational. Do you know what I mean? That says so much about the man, you know, because I always say in fighting, you're going to be a hammer and a nail. Because it's all well and good being a hammer. It's all well and good being a bully. It's all well and good fighting your fight when you're in the driving seat and you're dishing out the punishment. You know what I mean? Of course, that's what we want to do. But sometimes when you're fighting certain guys or the best guys in the world, the shoe's going to be on the other foot. And you're going to go from being the hammer to being the nail. And you're going to be on the receiving end. And you have to have that mental toughness, that character, the ability, whatever adjective you want to use to endure that kind of punishment and beating and say, fuck that, I ain't done. I'm still going to go forward because you know how hard it is to get your ass kicked in a round and then go back, sit there for a minute and go, okay, let's do this again. Let's go. And you start taking it again. And then end of round two, you're like, oh, no, we got this, baby. I'm just getting warmed up. He's getting tired. And then you get smacked all over the place. And you're like, and then at the end of round three, you're like, we've got him just where he wants him. He's fucking tired now, okay? Your nose is splattered across your face. Your legs are killing. Your calves been kicked to fuck. You got blood pouring out of every orifice known to man. And your coach is like, oh, but he's getting tired. Come on, Kelvin. We got this, buddy. And you're like, okay, coach, let's go. Do you know what I mean? That takes a special human being to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the willpower there is absolutely incredible. And like, you know, you did kind of touch on it, like it's a very different fight with Max Holloway and Giga. Like you said, Max is going to touch you to death. He's just going to keep putting pressure on you, keep putting volume on you, find weird angles, and just keep putting combos on you. Giga has that one shot power, especially in those legs. I mean, the duel, I'm trying to remember, you know, who it was, but the kick to the liver and then the kick again to the head. You know, I watched this Shane Burgos fight recently versus Calvin Kattar. I think it was like last night. And I noticed that anytime Burgos was going to the body, it was disrupting Kattar a little bit because he likes that, you know, like 1-2-3-4-5 punch boxing combination. Does Kattar have the kind of style where he steps in for to start a combination and Giga rips him to the body, like what's the answer for Calvin? You know what I mean?
Well, if Giga rips
Calvin to the body, yes.
Are you talking with a kick?
Yes.
Well, what you got to do is generally, and it's easier said than done, because Giga is a kicker. He's a kicker. Calvin is a puncher. And that's very simplistic, but that's what we're going to label them as, because in terms of their favored ability, that's kind of what they do. And anytime you're fighting a kicker like Giga Chikadze, you want to crowd him. They always say crowd the kicker because they need space to operate. They need that distance. Obviously, the leg is long, you know what I mean? You can still kick someone at short range, but generally a kickboxer like that, they need that kind of space to operate. So you back them up. You back them up against the fence. From there, they've got nowhere else to back up, and now you're in boxing range. Of course, they can clinch. They can try and take you down. They can throw knees and elbows and all that type of stuff. But when you're fighting a guy like Chikadze or any good kickboxer, a Stephen Wonderboy Thompson or anyone like that, you want to crowd them. You want to push them back. You want to take away their range, their favored range, should I say. But easier said than done. Chikadze's 7 in a row, I believe, in the UFC. He's finishing people. I mean, he just took out Cub Swanson. I think, was that his last one? Or was it Edson Barboza? It might have been. Barboza, that was a great win. I mean, Chikadze is a lot of fun to watch. And the Giga kick, oh, here he is. There's our guy.
What's up, Paul?
How are we doing, man?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing, Paul? Are you good? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Harrington, if you have anything to ask towards the end, jump on, my friend. How are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. How are you, mate?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, good, good, good. Yeah, sorry about the break. Say again.
Did you have a good festive break?
COVID. The whole family.
Oh, did you?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't too bad. You know what I mean? But we had a few days we were all in bed. And all the kids, they were in bed. We yeah. were in bed. And I'm like, we should really check on them. And I'm like, fuck it.
See, as you're saying, you had COVID. I was kind of hoping for COVID so that I had no family coming. So it was just me and my immediate family, me and my two girls. Man, that's what I was hoping for. But unfortunately, none of you's caught COVID.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're wishing for COVID. You know things aren't well at home and you're like, fuck, somebody give me COVID. How was your Christmas though, mate? You have a good time?
It was good. It was really good. Obviously, I've been off fairly last year, which is a pain in the ass. And when fighters get left to their own devices, you know, we train hard, but we kind of do this balance where we just drink loads of beer. So I was having, I'm pretty borderline in alcoholism. The woman came in the day for work, and she's like, how many beers you had? And I was like, I've not even had one yet. This is like 5 o'clock, and I'm like, I've not even had one yet.
So for me, I'm trying to eradicate the beer from my life a little bit. I'm not saying I'm never going to have a drink again, but I'm trying to start with that. But you know how it is. Old Brits are like that. You know, come dry January, as they call it. Are you trying to do that as well, Paul? Or are you just like, you know?
Nah,
I am who I am.
You know what? Seeing people are like, oh, it's January 1st. It's New Year. It's new me.
New
like,
me.
It's a bit of bullshit, isn't it? Like, it just because
it is. But it's not bad to start the year with good intentions.
I know, but then you just fuck it up. So you might as well go into the new year with a shotgun, just fucking blammo beers.
I am who I am. Let's go. Let's start. Oh, dear. You know, you mentioned there that you hadn't fought for a while. Obviously, you only fought once last year against Jamal Hill. Tremendous fight. What was the reason for that, Paul? Why didn't you get back in there? Just one of those things, COVID?
Well, we got offered Gustafsson right after that fight, and this was like a fight we'd been waiting on. Because we'd been like a journeyman for a long time. We'd been like the guy who was sitting in the outskirts of the top 10, top 15, just fighting all these up-and-coming guys. And the UFC said, listen, you've done us a good turn taking all these fights. Any chance you can fight Gustafsson? Now we were like, yes, in a heartbeat. So we ended up signing all that fight. Gus got injured and the fight was then... what we were told was, listen, leave it a couple of weeks and let's see how serious this injury is.
Where was that going to be, Paul?
It was going to be in London.
Right.
This was during the summer. I remember it was myself. There was Dan Till was fighting. Tom Aspinall was fighting. Mike Grundy was in there. Molly McCann. And I think this was Paddy Pimlet's opening.
They just moved it to the Apex because of the nonsense. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So what happened was they said, we can either give you somebody that's not ranked, so a not ranked fighter, or you can wait for Gus. And then we're like, you know, we've got to this point. Is it worth just taking an unranked fighter just for the sake of a payday? And now, don't get me wrong, who doesn't like getting a payday? But we decided the progression in the career was a wee bit slightly better than just getting another fight. So we waited, and then it was like, listen, we're going to be ready till the new year. Any chance you would take another fight? And we said, as long as it's in the top 10, we're happy.
Yeah.
We always want to kind of shoot up at the moment because I'm getting a bit older. I'm losing my hair, even though I had a wee bit of hair transplant.
You're looking good. I tell you what you're lacking on top of your head, you've got on your face, because I put it on Twitter earlier. I said, Paul Craig's coming on, any questions? And someone said, what product do you use on your beard? Because I'm sure you use no product, but they wanted to know, how do you have such a luscious beard? It's because you're a fucking real man.
Well, see, you would think that, but when it comes to the old man, it's nothing but female juices.
What do you mean?
Like pussy juice, mate. Nothing better.
I thought that's what you were going to say. I'm like, please let me be interpreting this correctly. And when you said female juices, I thought you were like, oh, yeah, my wife, she knocks up a bit of fucking, you know, she has some recipes for...
No, just stay up. Get down.
Good old-fashioned pussy mate. Juice.
Just get down into Fish Town.
Get down to Fish Town. Oh, yeah, my man. God. Brilliant.
Keep it nice
fucking
and
love
smooth.
It. So that's
so the for
secret,
the ladies, for the ladies out there that have a beard and want to keep it smooth, there's only one way to get it smooth in.
So what happens if when bush meets bush?
I don't know if I've experienced that yet.
An entanglement. That yet.
I imagine it would be. Imagine it's like two octopuses fighting.
Oh, my God, that's brilliant. Talking of schedules then, so you opted to wait to get a ranked guy, right, which I get. But you also came out and said you're going to retire at 35. How old are you, Paul?
I'm 34. I'll be 35 in November.
So no time to waste.
I know. Well, see, my reason, my whole reason is like, see, when you do anything in life, you do it for your purpose, don't you? You do it to try and get somewhere in life. And I made this kind of deal with myself. If I was 35 and still scrabbling about fighting not that I'm fighting nobody, so that's wrong for me to say, but not progressing in my career, then what's the point of doing this? Like, if you're only fighting for money, then and if that's your motivation, then go for it. But it's not my motivation. And I don't know, being 35, just fighting MD for the sake of having a fight and getting money, I don't know if it motivates me enough. But right now, I'm motivated. We're currently got a top 10 opponent lined up, which should be for London in March. His name has definitely got love in it. So that's the clue. Top 10 opponent, his name definitely says love in it.
All I can think of is McLovin, which I know that we don't have a McLovin in the fucking UFC, but that's where my head's going.
So it's something. So his name
is love in it. Continue talking. I'm looking at the rankings.
Top 10 opponent, we're loving his name. Obviously, I'm not giving you the details here like this.
No, of course. This is me extrapolating it, reverse engineering who it could be.
Is it Glover Teixeira?
Hey.
Where do you get love for? Glove. That's smart. No, it's not Glove. I'm not sure. I'm
going to say it's not him just based on, because you'd be pretty happy if you were getting a fucking title.
Yeah, I don't remember that fight.
Yeah.
So we're so close to breaking this top 10 with this opponent. Very favourable fight. It's a fight where quite a lot of people have said it.
Nikita Krylov, you didn't say it, but I said it.
Well, if this is, it's either him or Glover, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there it is. It's either a title fight or Nikita Krylov. But anyway, whatever, March 19th, I'll be there, hopefully. Sorry, you were saying, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. So we got offered that fight last year. I think it was the 18th of December. And then America shut the borders for everybody. It was like, listen, you're not double vaccinated, you're not getting in the country. And like myself, like quite a lot of the fighters, on the roster, they haven't been lining up for the vaccine. So I wasn't vaccinated. I've now put that in process and progress to try and get vaccinated for the 19th, just in case London doesn't happen. I'm so hopeful that London happens because I feel like that would be like the doors opening up for everything. If London happens in the 19th of March and we've got like some sort of normality in London where there's fans and that kind of stuff, then I do imagine that things are going to get back to normal. London is a perfect place for this fight because two top European fighters on a card full of British guys. I see people tagging me with some of the names that is currently in the British rankings. Like when we've got like Darren Till, we've got Mike Grundy, Tom. We've got Molly, we've got Meatball, we've got Paddy Pimlet, you know, T, Leon, Edwards, all these guys. What an absolute list to be involved in. So if we can have that in London, because you know what, I hate when people say, there's no headliner there. There is. There's a headliner. Every one of these fights are a headliner. Yeah. You can put any of the top British guys there, will be a headliner fight. No matter who it is. And I know I've heard rumours of it being Hall versus Till, which would be an amazing fight for a London card. To kick back open the new year, all this nonsense put to bed, and then we have Till fighting against Till. Till fighting against Hall, and then myself somewhere. We have Big Tom fighting against...
Fight card that would be.
I know.
Would be a fucking sensational card. And it's needed for the UK... fan base. It's needed because it's been so fucking long now. You know what I mean? And yeah, of course, they still get behind the fighters and they stay up till bloody 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and they watch it internationally. But there's no better feeling than A, being in the arena or sitting at home in a localized time zone, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night, like a normal person, like a proper sport, you know what I mean? With a beer in your hand with your mates or your family or whatever, and watching it like that on a stacked card full of English. Fuck me, let's go. I can't wait.
I'm buzzing as well. And you know, see here on the fans back in Arizona, that's the first time we've had fans for myself for fighting during the pandemic. You know, my fight, I was meant to fight in London right at the start of March when the pandemic hit. That was then scrapped. And then the next time we had fans was in Arizona, and you miss them. Like, you can have all these shows and you can have them in the Apex and you can have them in Fight Island, and it's cool concepts. Nothing beats fans. There's not a sport in the world where you go, that sport's better without fans. Even when you're watching the guys playing snooker and the wee bit of cheer, it makes it.
Yeah.
Like the guys.
Yeah. And it's a feeling that not many people on the planet will get to experience.
Yep.
But being there in front of 20,000 people, being in the octagon, going out there, going up against another world-class opponent, getting the win, getting the stoppage, the crowd goes crazy. It's the best feeling on the planet. I mean, talk us through that finish, Paul, that you had against Jamahal Hill, because it was pretty gruesome, mate.
Yeah. You know, it's a sequence I like to use. Like, it's not like something I'm keeping under wraps where it's like, oh, it's secret. It's not secret. It's the mere lock. The guy creates an opportunity where he either goes one way or the other way. And that's what jiu-jitsu is. And it's the same for boxing. If I fling a jab, he creates a reaction. The reaction you're looking for is probably the right hand, but it could easily be that left hook. And it's the same in jiu-jitsu. I created a reaction with a mere lock, and it just happened to be there was the arm bar rotated in, inverted, and then caught it nice and deep. And as I'm pushing it, I could feel his arm just starting to buckle. And I was using, like, it was like, give me a lever long enough and I'll move the earth. You know, Archimedes just, and it just went. And then I put my hands up to say to the referee, like, listen, his arms went. And I think I might have shouted, his arms broke. Like, maybe he's going to understand a Scottish guy.
Yeah.
Nobody's.
We've lost half the audience already, Paul. You're on fire today. I mean, your accent's great. I love it, but you're talking very fast today, but fuck them. They got to keep up.
I know. Did you ever hear the story we were in Brazil and they asked to send out an interpreter with me?
Say that one more time. Down in Brazil.
We were in Brazil and the UFC said, listen, there's another Scottish guy that works for the UFC and he's Mark and he says, would you go out and interpret what Paul's saying? And Mark said,
are you serious?
Fuck off. That's disrespectful.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
It's pretty funny.
So the arms flopping about, you're screaming to the referee, his arm's broken. Jamahal Hill was just, he wasn't tapping. Did he tap? He didn't tap,
No,
right?
He didn't. I love the fact that he didn't tap. Like, he's a guy who, he plays the villain, doesn't he? He plays a character where he's a bad guy, he's creating a wee bit of, he gave me the push, you know what I mean? He made me look. He came up to me, started a fight on...
You guys did not get along leading up to that one.
We didn't. But I had no idea why this was. I just thought he hated me. But you know what it's like, social media? People have been messing him, giving him like loads of shit. And see the fact that he was engaging with it, people were then, oh, this is brilliant. I'm just going to keep winding him up. So he was then... He's then, it's like, it's Paul's fans. If they're wankers, he's wankers. And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. But he built me up as being like an absolute asshole, right? And he came up to me and tries to start this fight during media day. And it's like, you know what it's like yourself? Like, the last thing I want to be doing is signing posters, taking loads of pictures, doing the shadow box. And that's the last thing I want to do when I'm making weight. Never mind have you come up and try and chat shit to me.
But
it worked out. It worked out because if you think about it in the sport of it's entertainment, then it was entertaining. It got people talking about our fight. Then when it came to the weigh-ins, there was loads of emotion in the weigh-ins where we're all trying to get in each other's face. And then when it comes to the fight, and the fight ends the way it does, I love the fact that he's like, you know what? I've said too much shit. I need to go in my shield. And he's
because you guys were all cool afterwards. In fact, he said, because, who did he just beat? He had a great win just recently.
He just beat Jim Crew.
Oh, Jimmy Crew, that's right. He looked really good, so it makes your win even better. But I remember we were talking at the fighter meeting and he was saying, afterwards, me and Paul, we were hanging out, we had some drinks. He said you're a really good dancer as well, by the way, by all accounts. Yes. You were getting
dancing,
down.
Mate. Dad dancing.
Come on, give us a bit.
Just straight up, two-step dad dancing. And
there it is.
That was cool. Because after we've had a battle, it's like somebody wins, somebody loses. What's the point of holding a grudge? Like, there's no reason to hold a grudge. There's another 30 fighters in our division, so why am I going to hold a grudge for one guy or he's going to hold a grudge for me? It was like, listen, here's a couple of whiskeys. Let's make a night here.
Yeah.
Turns out his team were really, really impressed with the jiu-jitsu style that I've got. And then we started talking, and then from that, then I started speaking to Jamahal. And then, we're all in the same boat, mate. Fighters, we're all cut for the same cloth.
Sure.
We're all a wee bit mental in the head. We're all a wee bit... unhinged, but we're all pretty much the same kind of character. So to go out, end up in a nightclub, especially during a pandemic when Arizona was absolutely fine. Like, there was no nightclubs opened in the UK at this point. You were still having to, like,
come on, baby, let's go.
Yeah, and I'm talking, this was packed. This was like one of these American movies, you know. You see, like, American Pie the movie.
Were you in Scottsdale?
Downtown? It was Phoenix.
Oh, Phoenix. Yeah.
But I think they're pretty close. So I was like, you ever seen the American Pie the Wedding? Doing the Stiffmeister?
I was doing the Stiffmeister
in the middle of the dance floor.
I'll leave it to it. I mean, I'm not going to do that one, but all right. So it was all fun and games then when it was all said and done. And you're right. You know what I mean? Once the fight's over, generally it's like, you know, you laugh about it, you shake hands and that's that, it's done. You mentioned your jiu-jitsu before, Paul. I mean, obviously you're rounding out your skill set and your striking has really improved from when you first came to the UFC, but it is your jiu-jitsu that stands out. Yeah. Is that how you class yourself as a fighter? Do you class yourself as a jiu-jitsu fighter? And are you proud of that? And talk to me about that.
Going right back to the start when I first started, it seems like a bit of an insult. You're just a jiu-jitsu guy. You're just a jiu-jitsu guy.
I don't think so, but continue.
But that's what I was getting tired of this, and then you're like, no, I'm not. I've got other tools in the arsenal. I can do more. So then I kind of was trying to showcase my striking when my striking wasn't that great. Like, I could handle people. I could hold my own against boxers. I was competent. But trying to lean into something that's not your bread and butter, it's like if you're a footballer and you're like, somebody said, "I shit, we have a right foot," then you're going to focus on that right foot and you're going to try and show them, like, no, I'm good. I can really do that. And then after I got knocked out in Glasgow, then I started to realise, no, Paul, what got you to the dance floor? What got you to the dance floor was the fact that your jiu-jitsu was effective. That's my jiu-jitsu is not flashy. It's just effective. I get people into the submission that I like, and I kind of work for in these certain areas. So then from that fight, I started working with a sports psychologist, and then he started to improve my striking. But from improving my striking, for improving my confidence in...
Was that before the Shogun fight?
It was.
Yeah, because when you came out that first Shogun fight, well, was it Brazil?
I'm not sure where it was.
Yeah, Brazil. Because you came out and you seemed like a different man. You know what I mean? You seemed to just have this real belief in yourself. Because the way you just went right at Shogun, I think it shocked the entire world. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And fair play to Shogun. He's a tough bastard. But a lot of people would not have survived that.
I know. He's crafty. That's who he is. He's been in here too long. He knows how to duck, dive, and he managed to get null and void my game, because we knew that he thought we were going to come out and try and grapple. So we were like, let's just throw a spanner in the works and try and outstrike him. And I remember walking out to the third round, and he's sitting in his stool, and his face is all bloody, and it's there. And I was jacked. And I'm like, yes, Beckham, get up.
That's right. Because I commentated it, obviously. Right. So I remember. I was like, holy shit, look at Paul. He's like a man possessed.
All right. And I remember just being like, get up. And then, I think I went to kick him or something, and he took me down, ended up my guard again. I just couldn't move him. I was thrown up. He was just clamped up really tight, null and voided my jits game. And then it was one of these things, because people said, why didn't you just stand up? Jiu-jitsu is one of these things where it's like, I nearly hit that. I think I can get it again. And I was so close. I can get it again. And you just keep chipping. And then the clock was chipping away as well. When I'm trying to get, like, throw up these submissions and he was stopping them, the clock was ticking away and I wasn't getting them, and I was thinking, I can get the next one. And then I managed to get back up, take him down, and by that time it's too little, too late, isn't it? And that's your sport. That was the first time I ever went to the judges, like, in my whole MMA career.
Well, you've come close a few times, but you always find a way of stopping it, even if there's 1 second left.
I know.
Well, listen, we have Kevin Holland joining us in 5 minutes, so we'll leave you on this note. So hopefully March 19th, against an opponent that shall remain nameless but might end in the words love, in London in front of a packed house, that's hopefully when we're going to see you again.
Yep, Michael, listen, I can't wait because I don't think we've ever drank in the UK, have we?
No, we have
in
not.
In fact, going back...
You came to the show, though, in Scotland, but then afterwards...
Did you tell everybody about the Scottish fans telling you down the wine?
Oh, mate, that was every one.
Was that every single?
Every single fucking show, which is good because I was shitting my pants because I've never done anything like that before. It was amazing. In my life.
Like, what a story. Like, because
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I loved it. I'd read your book, but there's something reading the book. It's great. The book's great, but see, actually seeing the stories coming out your mouth and looking at the wee videos and all the things leading in you, and you're giving us all these wee insiders. It's an amazing show. And for MD, thanks, like, mate. Obviously, I'm not just smoking like pipe here. Like, yeah. It's amazing. But
MD, it's
a fan of MMA, not just a fan of yours, but a fan of MMA. Just kind of dip in and actually see the story, like as it unfolds. Loved it. It was amazing.
Thanks, Paul. I'm doing it again later this year. We've got like 17 dates in England and across Europe and then New Zealand and Australia. I'm terrified again because I was like, I did it one time. I'm like, whew, it went well. Let's end on a high. But now we're doing it again. I guarantee one night I'm going to fuck it up. And especially if, like Glasgow and every other night, they keep sending the drinks up because, listen, I got to oblige. I got to play the game. Paul, we'll have to let you go.
Listen,
my friend.
No worries,
thank
man.
You.
Thanks for having me on, my friend.
No, Paul. Always a pleasure talking to you. Huge fan of your work. I'll see you in March. All the best with training camp. And thanks again for joining
me. See you soon, man.
Take care, Paul. All the best. And there he is, surging light heavyweight contender, the one and only Paul Craig. And for the American audience, you might have struggled because I think he had a few coffees there. What do you think, Harrington? Are you alive?
Yeah, probably one or two, and then some extracurricular activities.
I think he was excited to be. Oh yeah, and he gave us his secrets for maintaining a healthy glow with the beard. Is that your chosen method, Harrington? You just take a few Blue Chew and off you pop.
Be honest with you, if it wasn't before this show, it certainly is entering my daily beard.
Going
regime.
Forward, that is how it's going to be. All right, mm-hmm. Well, we're just going to take a real quick break. All right, guys, I just want to thank our newest sponsor, which is Chalk, and that is chok.com. Listen, it's been a while since we've had a natural supplement here, Believe You Me, but it's not for the lack of interest. I tried a bunch last year, nothing had been worthy of the Believe You Me approval, but the Chalk Nation sees themselves as herbalists, natural healthcare practitioners, bioharmonizers, and health conscious creators with a passion for bringing out the best in their partners. Okay. So, listen, what are we talking about here? We're talking about restoring your vitality. They do many, many different things, but the thing that I'm going to tell you about is their natural testosterone booster. Chalk Daily is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster available. The main ingredient, which is purified Shilajit, is a powerful adaptogen from the Himalayan mountains. Shilajit delivers over 40 different minerals, unlike many other products on the market. Chalk contains exceptionally low levels of heavy metals. Shilajit has helped restore and maintain their vitality to men for over 5,000 years. It supports healthy hormone systems. It promotes endurance and enhances healthy inflammation response. The Chalk Daily System is just two pills. It enhances everything from the basics like gut health to the important stuff and maintaining the same testosterone levels that you felt in your 20s. So if you want to go back to your 20s, if you want your 20s to be better, if you want testosterone levels to be increased and you want to do it in a natural way, or you just want to check out all the wonderful natural supplements that they have, you got to go to Chalk, C-H-O-Q, chalk.com, okay? Chalk.com, use the promo code Bisping and better yourself this winter with Chalk. And by the way, if you use that code Bisping at checkout, you're going to get 50% off your entire order. 50%, yes. Chalk.com, C-H-O-Q, use the code Bisping, 50% off. You're welcome. Kevin Holland, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Hey, listen, before we get into, we were just talking right there, and then they mentioned your rap video. I haven't seen this yet. Do you mind if we play it on the screen? I want to take a look. Is that cool, or do you want to do that?
Yeah, go ahead, play it.
They literally, Harrington just said, have you seen this rap video? Harrington, can we do that? Can we play this? I think they're scurrying in the background.
1 second, let me grab it.
They're scurrying about. How you doing, man? How's everything?
Everything's going pretty good. Can't complain. You know, another day in the paradise.
Dropping down to welterweight.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it. I mean, you're a pretty big middleweight as it was. Getting down to 170, how hard is that going to be for you?
I don't think it'll be that hard. I mean, I don't think I was that big. I walk around, like the heaviest I was getting was like 198. And that's like a lot of lifting and a lot of eating.
Really?
I mean, a lot of eating, no cardio. And then as soon as I start doing cardio, I go right back down to 192. So.
Really? Also, so then that is pretty easy then. 20 pounds, 21 pounds. Yeah. That's not bad. So you're going to get super shredded and then have like a 10-pound cut.
Yeah. Yeah, 85 was always super easy. So never had to be disciplined on a diet and stuff like that. So like, I never thought it was a problem. I enjoy eating and drinking and loving my life, but you know, just think I give a shot, you know?
Yeah, but of course, I'm assuming that you want to be here to become champion. You know what I mean? Cause I was like that. And then I had some losses and I thought, right, well, I'm not doing everything I can to like when I fought Rashad Evans, right? When he was in the sauna killing himself, I was sitting in a Chinese restaurant having noodles and drinking 7-Up. And then afterwards I was like, fuck, what can I do to give myself the best chance? And I thought, well, I'm not making the sacrifices. Was it a similar kind of thought process with yourself?
Yeah, I was like, I've been kind of going back and forth on like whether I want to go to 170 for a while. You know what I mean? It was like, it was always in the back of my brain, like I should give it a shot. And then like, you know, most guys become a double champ by being down a weight class and then going up a weight class. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll make magic happen at 85, and right when I get close, I'll drop down, get a Usman fight, so I don't have to cut weight a bunch of times, and then I'll go right back up. I know I can make it, but I just don't want to. I didn't want to live that lifestyle for a long time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Always having to eat healthy. I got to put in all this extra road work. So I'm a lazy guy. You know, I smoke, I chill. You know, so I'm one of the fellas. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
You know, it's like to finally have to be an athlete. You know what I mean? Have to do everything like an athlete. You know, that's a lot. I wasn't ready for it back then. You know what I mean? It's like after all the banter online, after two losses back to back, I was like, you know what? I could be a little more serious. So then I started taking the wrestling and shit serious. And then, you know, I started thinking even more so before the fight, before I even had the fight with Dawkins, I was like, you know what? I can go to 170. And we were talking about getting a 170 fight because it had been a while before we had a fight. So I was like, maybe we should do it now. But I was like, I don't want to go to 70 off of a loss. You know what I mean? Like, that'd be completely retarded. Well, then I got headbutted to the next century. And I was like, well, since we're in the next century, let's just go ahead and go down.
Oh, fuck. I forgot about that. That's right. Jesus Christ. I mean, how annoyed were you with that situation? Because the fight, if I'm not mistaken, it was early in the first round, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for anyone that hasn't seen it, I think I was commentating it. You guys engaged, a clash of heads, you dropped badly, and it looked like you were almost unconscious, and maybe you were, maybe it was a flash knockout. You managed to regain your feet, but then he took you back, right?
Yeah. We were grappling the whole time while I was on Corner Street. I don't like to say I'm conscious. I don't like the way that's.
Yeah, all right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I was,
my bad,
I was on
my
Corner
bad.
Street. You know
Corner
I mean?
Street. Why Corner Street? I've never heard that one.
Yeah, I was on Corner Street. You know what I mean? I was definitely seeing stars, and you know what I mean. You know, trying to remember the alphabet at that moment in time, but it's okay. You know, it's part of the process.
Yeah, it's a crazy feeling, isn't it? Oh, here's the rap video. All right, so sorry, Kevin. Let's take a look. Sorry, buddy, making you sit through this. And is this
boy, they got me
having fun with Cowboy?
Yeah.
Off with Cowboy. In full effect.
I wanted them to think the same way I thought at first. Like, I'm fighting Cowboy. You know, so
yeah. Oh, there we go.
I'm feeling good, I'm feeling gravy, 21 behind me. Oh, yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah,
legendary. Fight now, buddy. And what is the date for that one? March 5th?
Yeah, March 5th.
Mm-hmm. March 5th. And is that, hold on, is that a pay-per-view?
Yeah, 272. That's why I said
that's what I thought, yeah.
I was free all 2020. I was free all 2021. 2022, we're back, and we ain't free no more. We're no more free TV. You got to pay.
There we go. Hey, you're a star, though, Kevin. You're a star. Do you know what I mean? Everyone knows the name. Come on. 2020, what a fantastic breakout year.
Yeah,
listen, it is what it is. You know, it's a tough business. It's a tough game. There's no shame in it. So 170, it is there. It's the comeback season.
Yeah, Yeah. Don't call it a comeback, right? Been here before.
Well, exactly. My bad. So on Twitter earlier, and Harry, just have a look, see if there was any good questions on Twitter. But someone said to me on Twitter, they said, make sure to ask him why you went to AKA to learn to wrestle, but then you only stayed there for like 2 minutes or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got there. I was there a couple of days, you know, got some work in with Duran and DC, and I wasn't going to go to AKA. I was going to go to Gilroy?
Gilroy, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to go to Gilroy with DC, you know what I mean? To learn from the kids who aren't truly kids. Don't get it twisted here. They're not kids. They're robots, okay? They can wrestle like no other. And so,
I know. Because when I was training for George St. Pierre, same thing. I brought in these two college kids. And again, kids, you shouldn't say that. These motherfuckers would throw me around. Yeah. They're some big, strong, you know, that's all they do. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good. I mean, they're really good at what they do. So, yeah, I just went out there to really get to work with DC and them. It was never an AKA thing and things like that. And really, and it's just, you guys got to understand, sometimes you guys want certain things on social media and I give you guys what you want. You're like, hey, go to Dagestanian. I'm not going to go all the way to Dagestanian, but I can go to what you guys consider the next best thing. So I go see DC. Maybe Khabib would have been there. He wasn't there, but seeing DC, it was nice, very enjoyable. But, you know, been living in Texas for a while. So
yeah,
I got all homesick and I got tired of looking at mountains and I went back to Texas.
Are you still training with Travis Luter?
Yeah. Always.
Is it Luter or like, Luter? What do you say? Luter or Luter?
Luter.
Luter. Yeah. My bad. Yeah. My stupid fucking English accent. Luter. What about Fortis MMA? Are you working down there a bit as well?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, shit. All right. My bad.
I was mean to those guys when we were local. You know what I mean? And then we got to the next level and I was like, well, I'm not fighting them anymore. I probably should go hang out with them. But Safe says I talk too much. So until I can get that
really?
I have to stay on the sideline. Yeah, I love Safe, though. Safe's the man. You know what I mean?
No, Safe is amazing. Yeah. You know, when I had my first knee replacement, he sent me, must have been $500 worth of supplements like anti-inflammatories and natural remedies and things to help. Nice. So, yeah, Safe's awesome, man. 2020, it was a great year, 4 wins, mm-hmm. and it's finished with Jacare. Right. Oh, was it 5? Holy shit.
I broke records. Yeah.
Is that a record? 5 in 1 year?
Yeah.
Shit, man. Congrats. I mean, that's pretty special. Ended it, obviously, taking out Jacare in spectacular fashion. Uh-huh. Talk me through that finishing sequence. Was it just a case of, all right, well, I'm on the ground. His face is there, so fuck it. I'm just going to punch it.
He had my ankle, and really, I was just trying to get my ankle back. So I was like, trying to pull, it wasn't really coming free. So I was like, I'm going to smack him and pull my ankle back and get the fuck up and get out of here. And I did that and I got up and the whole fight was done. So it was like, good things happen to those, you know, those who, I don't know, shit just happens.
You roll the dice. He's boxing. Have you seen that? You see that announcement? I don't know who it is, but he's having a boxing fight soon.
I wish him nothing but a fat check. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's a legend in my eyes. I mean, I don't want to see him. After he was done with MMA, I just figured, you know, maybe some jiu-jitsu, maybe coaching, maybe seminars. I mean, he's a legend. You know what I mean? Boxing. I mean, hey, go get the bag. I ain't mad at you, dog.
Hey, God bless. God bless. So talk to me about Cowboy Oliveira. How did we get the job done?
A good time. I want to be more disciplined in there. I want to be smarter. I would love to have a good time in there, but to be honest with you, maybe I got to leave the good time for the after media and the before media. I just want to go in there and go to work. The wrestling coach I've been working with a lot, Mindset Mike, I still would love to work with Hendrix. It's hard to find bodies right here where we are. But when I shoot down to Houston, I work with Mindset Mike. That's what they call him, right?
Mindset Mike.
Yeah, it's like, I always was like, I don't need a mindset coach. But for some reason, some way, he's done a good job of getting me more mentally in the game, like, you know what I mean? More, I guess,
dialed in.
Yeah, it's like, I understand, like, you know, although I may do my antics and I may do my little things, I'm still focused on what the freaking job is. You know what I mean? And like the super match with jiu-jitsu, the job was to stop the takedowns. We stopped the takedowns. You know what I mean? It's like, So
yeah, because like if I was going to be critical, and I'm sure you heard this a few times, you know what I mean? When you lost some of those fights, it seemed like, and I'm sure you knew what you were doing, you know, but people, the general narrative was that you were dicking about a little bit and not taking it seriously. I'm sure you take it seriously, and I'm sure that you work your ass off, because you don't get results the way you got unless you do. But you know what I mean? But what would you say to that? That people say, well, he was fucking about, but he's not taking this seriously.
It's funny. The same people that say I'm fucking around and not taking it serious, they had a blast when I was telling Jacare how I had a dream and knocked him out. So it's my Candyman story. You know what I mean? The Candyman's always going to have some different type of candy, and not everybody's going to be happy with the candy. You know what I mean? But as long as you like sweets, you'll be okay. Yeah, I feel him 100%. We could always be a little bit more focused. Imagine if I was 100% locked in on the Derek Brunson fight, and I had so much going on, you know what I mean? Nothing taken away from Derek Brunson. He did a good job. Yeah. But imagine if I was locked in 100% on the Derek Brunson fight. Imagine if I never opened my mouth to say anything. It wouldn't have just been a one-sided lay and pray. It would have been a boring one-sided lay and pray. At least you got a few comedy skits out of the whole thing. I farted in a man's face and whatnot. I mean, you still got a good time out of it.
You did?
Yeah, so, you know, oh my God. I mean, it's all about how you look at it, you know?
Hey, you might have lost the fight, but you farted in the guy's face. It's a moral victory.
You know, he ate ass that night, so it was okay.
Harrington, our producer and sometimes co-host on here, Harrington, show yourself. He was talking to me, and just as you came on there, so I never got to quite finish it. I don't know much about this world, but he says that you're – Harrington, speak.
Well, I mean, you know, you made headlines when you made the fight announcement for UFC 272 exclusively on your OnlyFans. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about what that partnership's been like, and how are you finding, you know, the DMs on OnlyFans?
And what is the weirdest request that you've had?
I mean, somebody wants my draws, and I'm perfectly fine with that. You know, I'm perfectly fine with somebody wanting my draws. I mean, I actually think that's pretty cool.
People actually ask for your underwear.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you send them out? You're like, okay, what's your address?
I will definitely send you some underwear. You want some underwear, some socks? I'm sending you anything but nasty pictures.
I can't wait.
You know what I mean? So
Christmas came early.
It's free, not freaky, on my page. If you want something special, of course, you know, it's going to cost. But I mean, hey, I like it. I don't have to worry about like getting banned for saying something. You know what I mean? Like, so somebody says something slick on there and I decide I want to reply with something slick, I don't have to worry about getting in trouble. I can promote how I want to promote. If I wanted to reach over here right now and we were on my OnlyFans doing this podcast and fire up a fat ass blunt.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody.
Well, you can do that here as well. I don't give a shit. But
you know what I mean, you know what I mean? But we don't need to do that. So
that Darren Till, he's had his Instagram taken down. I'm not sure what it's been about 6 weeks now. He had 2 million followers taken down. I mean that's
not fucking good. You know,
it's not.
That's bad business. So yeah, you know, I just try and have a platform. I'm actually going to drop a little, like, you know how we have the embedded and stuff like that. I'm a big fan on TV shows and stuff like that. So I remember watching T.I. and Tiny back in the day and all these different soap operas you get to watch. And my life it's just my life, you know. Some people might like it. Some people might hate it. But as long as they tune in, you know what I mean, give them a chance to decide whether they like it or not. So I'll probably put some of that on OnlyFans too. I got a couple camera guys that need, you know, they want to come around to get their name up and stuff like that. So why not let them come through and record a little bit, dissect it, throw it out there. You can see some training. You can see my mom cussing.
So where do people find that? OnlyFans/Kevin Holland?
I don't even know, to be honest with you.
The master promoter at work.
My manager, he remembers everything. You know, he's like the sister I never had.
Yeah, man. All right, well, listen, Kevin.
OnlyFans.com/trailblaze to the top.
Oh, there it is. Look,
he should have used Big Mouth, you know, OnlyFans, Big Mouth, you know, that would have been good.
It works. So on that note, so just a moment ago, we had Paul Craig on, you know, the Scottish light heavyweight, and he has a very impressive beard. And we asked him, we said, well, someone on Twitter said to us, what does he use to make his beard quite so what's the word I'm looking for? Luscious, you know, and he said, from eating pussy. He said, that's the only remedy. I don't know why. Just in what you said there, you went, made me think of that, you know?
I need to find out who he's eating on, because my shit's not working.
It's having the opposite effect.
Yeah.
He's cutting it down. All right. Well, I guess on that note, we'll let you go. Hey, all the best on March 5th, man. Good luck with training camp. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, brother.
Really appreciate it, Kevin.
Nah, always a pleasure. Thanks,
bro. OnlyFans.com/trailblaze to the top. Oh, he's gone. There it is. There it is. The one and only Kevin Holland. Big mouth himself. OnlyFans.com. Find him on there. Big fight coming back, 170. Excited to see how he does. Today we are welcoming back IP Vanish VPN to the show. You know the deal. IP Vanish has been a long-time sponsor of ours, so it's so great to have them back. And let me tell you about IP Vanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, and you really should, the easiest way to protect yourself is with IP Vanish VPN. Rated 4 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot, IP Vanish provides an encrypted connection for all of your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, or even hackers from intercepting your data. You know, we're talking all your financial details, personal information, online activity is completely safe from threats with IP Vanish. Okay, you're not going to get hacked. You're not going to have people logging into your bank account, people hacking your Instagram, your social media and all that stuff, and changing your passwords and blackmailing you. Believe me, that stuff goes on. Okay, IP Vanish eradicates all of that. And also, if you're in other countries, you can maybe access certain pornographic websites. What do I know? But still, get started. If you're in Abu Dhabi, trust me, it's going to come in handy. Get started with this limited time offer and save 50% off your monthly and annual subscriptions by going to IPVanish.com/believe. 50% off, ladies and gentlemen. One more time, that is IPVanish.com/believe. And that's all lowercase, by the way. Okay. All right, there he is, the one and only Kevin Holland. Thank you, Kevin Harrington. Come on, I'm sitting here by myself like some kind of weirdo. You know, Kevin Holland, always a lot of fun to watch. You know what I mean? And I do. Everyone likes the antics, as he said. You know what I mean? When he's talking and all the rest of it. And it's weird because, as he says, people enjoy that. But then when he loses, they go, he's not taking it seriously. I guess you have got to find that nice middle ground. But yeah, good luck. 5th of March. Talking of the 5th of March also, UFC 273, we had some pretty big news this week. Harrington, the floor is yours.
Well, yeah, I mean, in that promo video that Kevin Holland put out, he said he's fighting on the
same
card.
Which is pretty good, by the way. It's pretty, yeah. I like it.
Well, if you listen closely, he says he's fighting on the same card as Volkanovski. That's no longer true. Alexander versus Volkanovski is now going to be fighting the Korean Zombie at UFC 274. UFC 273 in March is going to be headlined by none other Jorge Masvidal taking on Colby Covington.
And it is about fucking time. You know what I mean? You know, I did a video on my YouTube channel about this, and everyone in the comments are all like, oh, you're being trolled. They're friends. They love each other. They're acting to the world. I'm like, no, you're out of your mind. You're so people. If anyone thinks that, they're so paranoid. Yes, they used to live with one another. Yes, they used to be friends. They were teammates. But guess what? A lot has changed. And now it seems like they hate one another. And if they are pulling the wool over our eyes, then they're doing a very good job. But I don't think that is the case whatsoever. As I say, it's about goddamn time. I thought they were going to coach the Ultimate Fighter. Remember, who was it? Who was meant to coach it? Oh, no. When Masvidal pulled out against Leon Edwards, I thought, oh, here's the perfect setup for them to coach the Ultimate Fighter. But this is an amazing fight. I'm very excited for this one.
I mean, I'm excited for the press conference. I'm excited for the fight. I'm excited for the embedded. I'm excited for the UFC countdown shows with this. Like, this is one of those pay-per-views where I'm 100% going to be locked in about 10 days out watching every piece of content around this fight. Like,
UFC better have security on deck because Masvidal will go. Do you know what I mean? Masvidal doesn't mess around. Colby's kind of the same way, not quite as loose, a loose cannon as Masvidal. But when it's so personal like that, like I was talking about it again the other day. Covington's bringing up his ex-wife. Covington's calling him a bad father and all this type of stuff. I mean, there's certain things when it comes to trash talk that you just don't fucking talk about. And you know, I mean, listen, it's going to make it spicy for us fans to be watching it and to talk about and to get excited for. Yeah, it's great. But you know, going on about his ex-wife, calling him a bad father. It's like, fuck me. You better be ready. Listen, I mean, they both recently got beat off Kamaru Usman. That's both their last fights. You know, and MMA math doesn't work. You can't stack it up like that and say, well, Masvidal got knocked out, Colby didn't. that doesn't matter anything. Yes, you could maybe draw some kind of conclusion from it, but it doesn't work like that.
But they've both also had the parallel as well. They both also fought Kamaru Usman to, you know, a 5-round decision, right? You know,
Colby Covington. Oh, yeah, true.
So, you know, like they're both 0-2 against Usman with one KO / TKO.
But when you hate someone that much, it's like the only time I can think back to that, and it was nowhere near as personal. And I've talked to Jorge Rivera. When I fought Jorge Rivera, the 10-year anniversary comes up next month. 10 years, crazy. But when it's that personal, and mine wasn't that personal. I'm trying to make out that it was, but it wasn't, because I'd never even met the guy. Do you know what I mean? But he was doing videos and he was talking about me and my family in England and all the rest of it. And I got all offended and I was mad and I was angry. And I was like, I'm not going into this fight for a mixed martial arts contest. I'm coming into this fight to beat the living shit out of you in front of the entire world. I am so happy. And that's what we're going to see here, right? Because unless they are selling it to us, and I don't believe that they are one little bit, I think this is personal. This is deep. This is an ultimate grudge. The two guys that are at the top of the food chain in terms of mixed martial arts, they both got great styles. They got excellent striking, good gas tanks. I'm telling you, this is an incredible fight.
Well, I mean, like, you know, you remember the, like, McGregor versus Mayweather, right? Where, like, you know, it was two guys who were beefing at the press conference in Brooklyn, and then, you know, they were flying over on the same plane to London, right? You know, the same private plane. And it's one of those things where, yeah, there is kind of goofiness that it's built into our brains with combat sports, but it's like, this is your boy. This is somebody who lived in your house. You're not going to publicly shit talk him for 5 years to maybe one day down the road sell this fight. That's crazy.
Maybe the best thing you've ever said, because you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you're right. It's like, really? They're pretending. Well, fuck me. They played the long game, didn't they? Do you know what I mean? Because they could have shit talked for a little bit, 6 months, a year. If it is 5 years, I wasn't aware that it was 5 years. If that is correct, I mean, that is the long play.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I'm just doing the mental math. I feel like I've been, you know, reading stories about Masvidal and Covington not liking each other from the moment I started working on the show, and we're coming up on 5 years now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's true. Maybe you people in the comment section will let us know, because we do look at the comment section. Thank you very much. But yeah, man, it's great. And main event of a pay-per-view, I do believe. I mean, generally, when's the last time they had main event not for a belt? Probably Conor McGregor. Nate Diaz 2, or Anderson Silva, Nick Diaz. Was that main event?
Both of the McGregor Poirier fights were non-title fights.
Oh, of course, yeah. Last year.
You have the two Nate versus Conor fights, and then you have Nick Diaz versus Anderson Silva in 2015.
And are they the only ones?
That's the only. And if you consider the BMF belt.
What about Randy Couture, James Toney? Was that the main event?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I can't imagine that would have been. That was probably like co-main event. Had to have been. There's no way they're putting James Toney as the main event of a UFC event when he's never fought MMA or even sniffed a 4-ounce glove in his life.
It was the co-main event. Frankie Edgar versus BJ Penn was the main event at UFC 118.
And who won in Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn? I mean,
Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, I was going to say Frankie Edgar, yeah. Wow. 118.
118.
Wow. Right. 118. It feels like a lot longer ago than UFC 118.
Really? I don't know. When I think about like 118, I'm thinking like where I was in my life. Like that's around the time it became a diehard for the sport and was catching, you know, every single pay-per-view without fail. And it's like, yeah, that was 10, 12 years ago now.
Yeah, well, I fought Dan Miller, UFC 114 in Vegas on the co-main event of Rampage and Rashad. Mm-hmm. And that was 2010. Yeah. 12 years ago. Holy shit. I was going to say 10 years ago. It's not 2020 anymore. It's 2020 fucking 2, not even 21. Jesus Christ. Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz, Colby Covington, early prediction. What do you think?
Masvidal, Covington. I wanted to ask you real quick before prediction. Do you think Masvidal puts up the BMF title for this
fight? Well, I said this on my YouTube channel. I said they should make this for the BMF belt because it is a pay-per-view and there's no belt on the line, and it just makes it a little more spicy and a little bit more interesting. It makes it more fun, you know. But then the overwhelming response was, Masvidal lost the BMF title a long time ago when he got knocked out unconscious by Kamaru Usman. I'm like, all right, well, you could, you know, I mean, I get that. You know, he lost the fight. Clearly, he was stopped. But it wasn't on the line. Do you know what I mean? That was for the undisputed welterweight championship of the world. And okay, it's a made-up belt. You know what I mean? But it's still fucking cool. Do you know what I mean? And it just makes it a little more spicy if that BMF thing's on the line.
It also does feel like the BMF is created as like a grudge match belt. You know what I mean? Like it's separate and apart from the world title scene, right? You're never going to be a quote unquote champion. But if you have a real beef with someone, right? Like Masvidal was saying, yeah, with Diaz, right? And you just want to figure out who the baddest guy is, you know, yeah, then put the belt up.
And no, I like it. It just makes it's silly, of course. But so what? It's entertainment. It's a bit of fun. You got two guys that are going to sell the fight. The lead up's going to be fantastic, like you said. I mean, that press conference, any press conference that Colby Covington's involved in, whether you love him or you hate him, listen, and I wouldn't say I hate the guy because that is far too much, but I certainly don't love the guy. But what I do very strongly appreciate is what he brings to the table in terms of the entertainment factor. You cannot deny Covington the way that he fights in the octagon. You know what I mean? He's a great fighter, tremendous gas tank, crazy output, high volume, insane cardio, mixes in the wrestling and the combinations. You know, he's got an exciting style. He brings it. And on top of that, like I said, UFC 269 or 68, whatever, the one in New York when he fought Usman. I was there in the crowd and he set that place on fire. He was so fucking entertaining. Do you know what I mean? And Masvidal's going to meet that energy. I'm telling you, I think this will do pretty big numbers.
So I was going to say, Usman versus Covington 2 did reported 700,000 pay-per-view buys. Dana White came out and said Jorge Masvidal did 2 million pay-per-view buys over three fights at one point. So, I mean, do you think that this is the star power to be, you know, like an over 1 million pay-per-view buy event?
I mean, it's tough. The only reason I say it's tough like that is because they're both coming off losses. You know what I mean? They were both stopped by Usman, but Usman's the pound-for-pound guy. And people, you know, that was for the belt. That was against a different opponent. This is a different matchup. And if you're a fan of mixed martial arts, then you're going to be a fan of this fight. Now, I wouldn't begin to hazard a guess whether or not they do over a million pay-per-view buys. Let me tell you, doing a million pay-per-view buys is an incredible accomplishment. To do that, and it's rare. It's rare. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't happen very often. So it probably won't do that. I hope it does for everybody involved, but it probably won't. But that's not an insult. Do you know what I mean? Hitting a million pay-per-view buys for a fight is incredible. But as I say, I think people will look at this as a new product. Not for the belt, of course. It's for entertainment sake. It's a fight for fight's sake because it's a fight that makes sense. It's a fight with a total grudge match. Like I said, it's about goddamn fucking time. You know what I mean? And for that reason, I think it will be commercially very, very successful.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you know, if he puts that belt on the line, the average public sees a belt over Masvidal's chest going into it.
Hey,
a little bit more likely to press that click button.
There you go. Shiny things sell. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All right. Listen, we've been going for a while now.
Oh, okay. I thought I was just going to give that prediction. Colby coming in as the favorite. I think I got to lean towards Colby in this, no?
Well, I mean, I don't commentate pay-per-views. Masvidal is slick. He just got caught. Masvidal, I think Masvidal's slicker on the feet. Masvidal can scramble. He's got good takedown defense. You know, you think of Masvidal, you think of him just as a brawler, but he's far from that. He's a skilled mixed martial artist. He knows his shit. He's probably got the same kind of gas tank as Masvidal. You know what I mean? They're both very athletic. They both train fucking hard. Listen, one thing's for sure, but when it's personal like that, they're going to train their asses off because no one wants to lose to the other guy. Do you know what I mean? And it's one of those where that wanting to train may result in them being weaker on fight night because they might overtrain. Whenever it's so personal, that's when the fear of overtraining can become a real thing because, like, you know, you sit there and you look on Instagram and you're like, motherfuckers on a run. I'm sitting there doing nothing. I'm fucking running. Do you know what I mean? But that's kind of a mental weakness. That's not how you should approach it. But as I say, when those emotions get involved and it's so personal, like that, stuff like that starts creeping in and you start doing extra, you start doing more, which of course can be detrimental in the long run. So I'm going to reserve my prediction for now. But what I am going to do is answer some of these questions because I believe you have been sending them in. Big thanks once again, Paul Craig. Thank you very much. And, of course, to Kevin Holland. Good luck on the 5th of March. We had interviews last week with Paddy Pimblett. Was that last week?
Yes, and Sean O'Malley.
And Sean O'Malley. So if you are around and you want to check those out on the YouTube channel, please do so. Also, if you want to buy merch, bymmerch.com. And if you want to send in a question, go to bympod@gmail.com. Send in the video content. We like it. And please, if you see this podcast, go out there, subscribe, leave a comment, ring the bell on the YouTube page, all that good stuff so you don't miss the content. But still.
I was just going to say, and if you want access to over 300 episodes of this show you can't find anywhere else, head on over to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get yourself a 7-day free trial and check out over 25 great shows on the network.
Please do. And then also, if have you sent in any questions this week? Terrible segue. That was the wrong word. Also, no. I said, right, okay. So, Brian, what do we have? Brian, you haven't had much of an appearance on today's show. How are you, Brian? How are you?
I'm good, man. Everything's great. You know, the show's been rocking. Paul Craig's was kicking ass. Fuck Kevin Holland. There's no need for me to talk.
Yeah, but we missed the interjections. You normally pop in with some little sweet one-liners. We missed that today, Brian. Come on.
I'm sorry. I'll step it up for next time for sure.
Right. Okay. So what do we have?
I got a question here. It's pretty interesting about weight classes. And Harrington probably has some pretty good insight into this one. So this is from Reggie.
Old Reggie.
What's up, boys? Reggie from New Jersey, aka the Golden Child. Quick shout out to Michael Bisping. You're the GOAT, period. Harrington, you're doing a great job in your new spot, and Brian, keep hooking it up. My question is, you heard George St. Pierre say, fighters of yesterday aren't as good as fighters of today, and fighters of today won't be as good as fighters of tomorrow. Is there any weight class in the UFC you think was better 5 to 10 years ago than it is right now? UFC expanded on their roster. They have more exciting fighters. But what weight class do you think isn't as good as it used to be? My answer, short and sweet, light heavyweight division. They used to have some dogs down there. Chael Sonnen, John Jones, Rampage, Rashad Evans. They're lacking a little bit. I know you just had Lionheart on it. He's a beast. No disrespect to him. But I think the rest of that division can step it up a little bit. And Harrington, put a shirt on, bro. No one's trying to see that.
Whoa. Well, Jerry, thank you very much, buddy. Jerry looking like he's trying to get in on the Bohemian Rhapsody cover.
It was Reggie.
Reggie. You know what I mean? You could play with those letters and swing it around a bit. Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y. Reggie. But Reggie, thanks, buddy. And you answered your own question, but you're absolutely right. That's the one that I was going to lean to. And yes, as Reggie quite rightly said, the light heavyweight division today does have some great fighters in. Of course, we've got Anthony Smith. We've got Alexander Rakic. We've got the champ, Glover Teixeira. The list goes on. There's a lot of great fighters in the light. Obviously, we just had Paul Craig on, you know, who's sensational. He's doing great things. But I kind of lean towards what he's saying. But I think that's more to do with maybe some nostalgia. But it used to be, I don't know if the fighters are better, but the light heavyweight division, they used to call it the glamour division. You know what I mean? Because that got all the headlines. It had Chuck Liddell, it had Tito Ortiz, it had Rampage, Vanderlei Silva, you know what I mean? Rashad Evans, and the list goes on.
That's the light heavyweight division that literally got me into the sport.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, there was a certain Michael Bisping in the light heavyweight division as well, but I wasn't part of the glamour squad. Fuckers. But I don't know if that means that they're better. Do you know what I mean? But that was the equivalent of the lightweight division today. Do you know what I'm saying? Like right now, the glamour division is a lightweight division by far. You know what I mean?
Well, did he say 5 years ago or 10 years ago? Because if it was 5 years ago, I have a pretty interesting answer.
Well, if it was 5 years ago, that's 2017.
Yeah, so that era between 2015, 13-14 to 2018. The middleweight division was absolutely stacked. I mean, obviously, you, Weidman, Whitaker was coming up in the ranks. Gastelum wasn't there yet, but you had Jacare. You had Yoel Romero. Dude, the list goes on and on, and to a point where, like, there was, you know, there was actual, like, merit to doing a middleweight Grand Prix at one point because, I think you were injured and you know, they were looking for the interim. And it's like, there's five or six qualified guys who could be fighting for this title. And it's like 185 at one point. I don't know. It doesn't seem, you know, you have Izzy at the
obviously,
top.
Obviously, it's convenient for me to agree, but I do actually agree with what you're saying because it was crazy back then. But yeah, I think if you go back even further than 10 years ago, the light heavyweight division, maybe 15 years ago, I mean, 2005, 2007, that would be 15. Now I still think it's 2020. that was like the killer time, you know, when all those guys were coming up from Pride, you had Shogun, you had Vanderlei Silva, as I said, Tito. I mean, he's a throwback. Chuck Liddell was still floating about back then. It was crazy. But to George St. Pierre's quote, he is correct. The general level throughout the entire sport has got better. It has shifted. It has improved because the sport's evolving. The sport's getting better. People are starting training mixed martial arts from the get-go. You know, they're not spending years specializing in one art where only 40, 30, 50, whatever they are, it probably depends. Percent of what they do is applicable. Do you know what I mean? Now they're doing techniques that are designed to work in the octagon from day one of training.
Well, it's like, yeah, but I agree with what you're saying, right? And my brain does tell me that the sport is evolving, right? The actual, like, you know, if you were to compare it to, like, the NBA, we're just moving out of the point now where it was, like, all Jewish guys leading scorers, you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of, like, era of the sport that we're in. So, you know, it's weird.
No offense to any Jews out there.
No, not at all. But, I mean, come on.
Basketball used to be weird.
Yeah, they.
I'm like. There was a time when Jews ran basketball.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Hank Greenbergs of the world were like the leading scorers.
All these 7'2" Roy Hibbert and black guys are just like, oh, we're taking over this. That shit is ripe for the picking.
Right, but it's like that's where the UFC is at in its evolution. So it would make sense that the athletes would evolve. But it's like I'm going down the list, and it's like you go back 5-6 years ago. I think John Jones beats the current champion at light heavyweight, right? I think Cain Velasquez, right, in his prime, gives a hell of a fight to Francis
Ngannou. John Jones, in many ways, though, not taken away from Glover Teixeira, is still the champion at light heavyweight. He's not the champion at light heavyweight, but he vacated and walked away. So your point does have merits. Of course it does. But had he still been defending the belt, I think John would probably still, you know, he beat Glover Teixeira, let's be honest, when Glover was younger and John was younger.
Right.
Well, sorry, continue.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, if you go like prime GSP versus Kamaru Usman right now, prime Frankie Edgar versus Charles Oliveira, like go down the list, those champions versus champions now, each one is still an absolute dogfight, if you ask me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think just generally across the board, you're right. I mean, champions, to be a champion, you got to be cut from a certain cloth and you got to have a certain skill set, a certain mindset, a certain mental toughness. You got to be a special individual, whether that was 15 years ago, whether that's today, you know. But I think it's fair to say that generally the state of mixed martial arts, the what we're seeing is better. I mean, like calf kicks, you know, they just didn't exist. They weren't a thing. I mean, it is evolving. Anyway, question number two, Brian McKay.
All right, so this one's a little bit longer. It's from Mr. JC.
JC?
G'day, guys. JC here, coming to you from London. First of all, huge fan of the show. Thank you so much for the content going through 2020 and 2021. It was a huge help through the lockdowns here. Got a question for the Count. Mike, we know you are the pioneer, the Brit that put UK MMA on the map. You know, incredible career. But there was a British fighter before your time, an infamous fighter. And in recent times, we've been hearing from Khamzat Chimaev about him being the true gangster. Well, the biggest gangster of MMA is Lee Murray. As I say, British fighter, grew up in London, really rough upbringing. He was into gangs and crime, but he got into... He was a good fighter, got into fighting, started getting training, started getting a few wins, got into the UFC, got his contract, got a few wins there, was doing pretty well. I got sucked back into the gangster lifestyle. 2005, he got into a fight in a Mayfair nightclub and got stabbed, I think it was five times. And then in 2006, he pulled off the world's largest heist, £53 million, him and his buddies. They were apparently pretty stupid, all got caught pretty soon. He escaped to Morocco, and he's been locked up in a prison since, and probably...
get to the fucking question, JC. Fucking hell, I know all this.
Were there times that you looked up to him? Was he sort of someone prominent on the scene that you were following? Have you got any stories about him? He's just a bit of a crazy, infamous character. Certainly not a good role model, but some great
stories. All right, we get it.
You had any Lee Murray stories with him at all. But yeah, cheers, guys. Love your work. Keep it coming. Fuck you, Harrington.
There it is. We don't hear a word you're saying, Harrington.
Sorry. You don't get to do that after a 9-minute long question. It's not right.
I agree. If you get to come on and be like comical and whatnot, and then you can end it at the end. But when you give someone's life story of points that I already knew, yeah. JC, first of all, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And I like the retro style calculator watch. I haven't seen one of those for quite some time. Always wanted one of them as a kid.
So badly.
Oh, God. I would see a kid with a calculator watch at school. I'm like, you motherfucker. That thing is cool. Look, you can add things up. Lee Murray. Yeah, look, listen, Lee Murray was a great fighter is what he was. What a fighter. I remember I was on the Ultimate Fighter it was the final day. We were getting out of the house, and that was the day that it broke. That he'd done this, the securities heist and robbed, I think it was like, 50 odd million quid. And he said, him and his crew were pretty stupid. They went, oh, that fucking stupid, because I know some of them and they are fucking still living life. But anyway, I used to fight on Cage Rage. I was a Cage Rage champion a long time ago. And Lee Murray fought on that card. Two of my fights, I fought Mark the Beast Epstein, and that was one of Lee's very good friends. So I never knew Lee as such. We were never boys or anything like that, but I met him a few times, fought one of his good friends a couple of times. And that was it. It was crazy because he was working a door, I think, outside of a nightclub or whatever, nightclub or a bar. I think it was a club, and he got stabbed, as he said, five times. I thought it was more than five. It was like 10 or 12 times, I believe. And he thought he was going to die, and it was all over the newspapers. And then like a week later, there was footage of him in the gym hitting the bags after being stabbed up to fuck. You know what I mean? So, yeah, he's definitely, a tough guy.
Pretty baller. Two questions. Were you on the Cage Rage card when he fought Anderson Silva?
I was there. I saw it. Was I on the fight card? I'm not sure. I might have fought Mark Epstein on that. Huh. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I saw it live. Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough night for him. Anderson Silva just kicked the shit out of his legs, just leg kicked him to death. No shame. I mean, he went to a decision. He went to a decision, and back then, nobody was doing that with Anderson Silva. You know what I mean? It was a tough night at the office, but he gave a good account of himself. And then, of course, people probably don't know this. Lee Murray actually fought in the UFC, fought Jorge Rivera, won by a triangle. Came out dressed as Hannibal Lecter from Sounds of the Lambs. He had the face mask on and stuff. Way before the Reebok days when you could do stuff like that. So that was cool. But yeah.
Do you believe the story that he became the unofficial UFC light heavyweight champion one night in a back alley?
Oh, when he knocked out Tito Ortiz?
Yes.
Well. This is a story for my YouTube channel, isn't it? Oh, my God. Oh, apparently, I have multiple witnesses that were there that say that did happen. It all kicked off after the brawl at the hall, UFC 38 and a half, I think that was.
Yes.
Yeah, and by all accounts, Lee Murray cracked Tito Ortiz and knocked him out. That's what I got told. I wasn't there, obviously. But still. There we are. That's the show. I've been sitting here on fucking Zooms since 8 o'clock this morning. It is now 1:45 p.m. I haven't had a thing to eat. I'm starving. I've had a wonderful time talking with you fellas. But ladies and gentlemen, remember to subscribe, tell your friends, leave comments, help the algorithm, and enjoy the fights of the weekend. UFC is back. Kelvin Kattar, Giga Chikadze. I'll be on the call calling the fights. Brian B. McKay is right on Twitter and Instagram, all that stuff.
All that
the
stuff.
The M. Harrington, same thing, right?
Yes, sir. The M. Harrington
for Harrington. And yeah, there you go. There's today's show. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your weekend. We'll see you on Monday.